The House Committee on Revenue for February 23rd, 2009 will come to order. I'm going to take things out of order this morning so we can deal with our work session first. We'll open a work session on bill introduction. Paul?
Mr. Chair, you have before you LC 1809 for introduction, legislative concept. What this does is increase the document recording fee from $10 to 16 cents, and those dollars are to go into the Assessment and Taxation Fund. The draft comes to you at the request of the Association of Oregon Counties.
Thank you. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move LC Draft 1809 be introduced as a committee bill at the request of Association of Oregon Counties.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves LC 1809 at the request of Oregon Counties be submitted as a committee bill. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, it is so ordered. Thank you. And we'll close the work session on bill introduction. And we will move to our main item for the day, which is the public hearing on House Bill 2461. We'll open that hearing. I want to announce that there is an overflow room here in down the hall in hearing room C, and the system is on there so that those who aren't able to get into this room or who feel that they'd be more comfortable in a less crowded room could go there and observe the hearing there. All right. Thank you. Mazin?
Chair Bernhardt, committee members, good morning. Mazin Malik, Legislative Revenue Office. We have today, just like the crowd of every day, we have House Bill 2461, I'm sure you'll. And it's, I don't think I've lived a pure life, Mr. Chair, but I've never had beer this early in the morning.
Or this late in the evening?
Sunday night. House Bill 2461, in a nutshell, to chair it as your SMS puts it, increases the tax on beer, and it takes it it takes it up to by gallon, and the amounts that you have is $49.61 per barrel. In essence, what that comes out to, in order to be able to compare it to what you have in the tables in your basic facts, of course, everybody has a basic facts book. It takes it up to $1.68 per gallon. This is, in essence, changes the order, if you remember, from the tax tables that we had in the orientation at the time that Oregon was in the lowest in the 50 and 51st to about the top, a little bit over the top. In your basic facts, you would find that order. That is including sales tax as well. So the excise plus sales, it's dollar twenty something at the highest state, this will put us at $1.68. Now, the bill also brings about different ways of introducing these revenues to different funds and using them in different ways, and you would have all these percentages in Section 4 of the bill, where you have 15%. To start with, that goes to the main fund, and then the rest of it, the 75%, has this distribution that is starting in line 44 of the bill, going to the second page, page 3, going up to line 3. This also puts a cap on the administration of about 8% of any administration of the fund. And Mr. Chair, I have to mention, although the way to tax the beverages come in different ways. This does not change the level by which the taxation is imposed. This is at the beginning of the process, at the highest level, which is the manufacturer and the importing distributor, and does not go down in the chain of distribution to a lower level. So that's in a nutshell what the bill in front of you, committee members, and then, Mr. Chair, you have the list of people who would like to introduce it and go from on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions about Mazin's introduction? I note that we have a very large number of people who would like to be heard. I'm going to ask for a couple of things. One is that we restrict comments to about 3 minutes per person. If someone else has already said what you want to say, it's perfectly okay for you to identify yourself and say, I agree with so-and-so, and then sit down. If you have something new to add, please do. That would be very, very helpful to us to get through the list. And I would like to hear from as many of the people who want to testify as possible today, and with the size of this list, I suspect it's going to be difficult to get through it. We're going to hear first from the proponents, Representative Cannon, Representative Dingfelder, and Mr. Bischoff from Senator Morissette's office, if he's here. Sorry?
Senator Dingfelder.
Senator Dingfelder. Thank you, Senator. You know, old habits die hard.
Okay. I think Representative Dembro also wanted to come up here.
Oh, and Representative Dembro, do you want to come up and join this panel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, good morning. You do get an early start on Monday mornings. Congratulations.
And we were actually 2 minutes late today, so.
Oh, my goodness. For the record, my name's Ben Cannon, State Representative, House District 46 in Portland. And first, thank you for your consideration of this bill today. Certainly on the heels of last Friday's revenue forecast, it's timely to be taking up revenue-generating measures this week. I believe, as I know many of you do as well, that balancing our own 9/11 budget will require raising new revenue as well as cutting services. You have a number of options about how to do that, and you have difficult choices to make. I am grateful for the talent on this committee and confident in your ability to raise revenue in a way that is focused, fair, and effective. We bring this proposal to you today not because we think it is necessarily the first or the best of your revenue-raising options, but because we believe it should be among the options you consider. None of us in this room have crystal balls. We can't know how the conversation about other revenue-raising options will go, and we don't know yet how bad this budget hole will be. And so we're asking merely that you not reject this proposal out of the gate, that it be among the options available for your consideration when those tough decisions must be made. Fundamentally, this is a fair proposal. It's based on a simple premise that adding a few cents per glass to the cost of beer is an acceptable price to pay to treat alcohol and drug addiction. It's reasonable because of two simple facts. Oregon's beer tax is the second lowest in the country and hasn't increased in 32 years. Specifically, House Bill 2461 would raise Oregon's beer excise tax from less than 8/10 of a penny per glass to about 15 cents. Oregon's excise tax is paid on beer that's sold for consumption in Oregon, either by the brewer of that beer or the distributor who first imports it into the state. Beer brewed out of state, for instance, Budweiser, Coors, would be subject to the tax at the point at which it enters the state. Likewise, beer brewed in Oregon but sold for export out of Oregon would not be subject to the tax. We project that this tax increase would raise about $165 million per biennium per year, or $330 million per biennium, which would be dedicated to funding alcohol and drug addiction services at the level recommended by Oregon Speaks, a statewide project that concluded last year and represented the most comprehensive look ever taken at Oregon's needs in addiction services. Our colleague, Senator Dingfelder, will talk more about the value of these programs in a couple of minutes. You're going to hear some very different claims today about the size of this tax increase, so I want to spend just a minute on this subject. The 15-cent figure is derived pretty simply. We divide the number you see in the bill, a tax of $49.61 per barrel, by 330, which represents the number of 12-ounce glasses in a barrel. If you're talking about 16-ounce pints, the figure is 20 cents per pint. That's 15 cents or 20 cents per beer to provide funding for alcohol and drug addiction services, including the $48 million that we are obliged to spend on addiction treatment as a result of the passage of Measure 57 last fall. And my belief is that the vast majority of beer drinkers out there would be willing to pay 14 cents more per glass for these services. Now, opponents of this tax, including our local brewers, will argue that we've got the math wrong. They will assure you that a 14-cent increase in the excise tax translates into a much higher increase for the consumer, $1.50 or $2 more for a pint, $2 or more for a six-pack, which, if you're concerned about making sure we're going to keep our local brewers in business, is pretty startling and pretty concerning. After all, I think we can all agree that demand for beer is at least somewhat elastic. That is, there is a point where a price increase will cause consumers either to trade down for a cheaper beer or find a different product altogether. Maybe that wouldn't happen at a 14-cent increase, but it seems pretty likely that $2 for more for a pint would cut into sales, perhaps significantly. Which is why I've spent the better part of the last few weeks trying to understand the claim that a 14-cent increase in the excise tax would lead to $1.50 or $2 more for a pint at the bar. The problem is that this could only be true if demand was extraordinarily inelastic. That is, if beer drinkers were willing to pay quite a bit more for their premium beer. So let's look at this. Opponents of the tax explain that you get from 14 cents to $1.50 by saying, basically, this is the way the system works. They explain that middlemen, in this case distributors and retailers, mark up the cost of the product, including the tax, on a percentage basis. In other words, suppose a distributor is accustomed to buying a beer for $1 per beer and selling it to the retailer for $2, who sells it to the consumer for $4, 100% markup at each step. We're told if the cost of the beer rises to $1.15 because of the 15-cent tax, the distributor will sell it to the retailer for $2.30, who will sell it to the consumer for $4.60, maintaining their 100% markups along the way. Let me make a couple of observations. First, even at this level of markup, a total of 300% between the brewer and the drinker, the 15-cent tax has become a 60-cent tax for the consumer, not the $1.50 or $2 per pint that we have been told would be added. Second, the profit margin for distributors and retailers has increased by 45 cents, despite doing no additional work. All that's happened is we've added 15 cents to the cost of the production. Distributors and retailers have added an additional 45 cents of profit. If you hear this claim today, I really encourage you to push and question this point. Why should distributors and retailers make additional profits from this tax? Is it customary in business for profits to rise when expenses go up? Won't sales decline if middlemen push their profits, and doesn't that fact give them an incentive to moderate the markup? If it was true that middlemen could profit from a beer tax increase, wouldn't they be here today supporting it? The beer industry will offer, perhaps, a secondary argument to support the prediction that beer drinkers will see mammoth price increases from this bill. They suggest that distributors and retailers may shift the tax burden away from low-cost beers and onto premium beers. In other words, they may not pass along the full cost of the tax increase on Coors, and to make up the loss, they'll pass along more than the full cost of the tax increase on a premium beer. This is theoretically possible, but their ability to do it is constrained by some of the same market forces that constrain their ability to pass along additional margins on beers, as I previously described. Most importantly, the middleman only stays whole if drinkers continue to buy the premium beer. If they don't, the middleman can't pay the tax. One way of previewing the effects of raising Oregon's beer tax might be to compare us to other states with higher excise taxes. My staff surveyed 50 convenience stores in 8 different western states, states with excise taxes ranging from Oregon's low to about 500% higher. Curiously, we could discern little or no relationship between the level of the excise tax and the price of the beer. We were surprised at this, but it turns out that this finding is confirmed by academic literature. A 2002 study published by two economists in the National Tax Journal concluded that while beer taxes are shifted entirely to consumers, there is actually a negative correlation between state beer taxes and price. It turns out that the state tax rate, is a very poor predictor a beer price. The effect of an excise tax is overwhelmed by other, more significant factors on regional pricing: transportation costs, the competitiveness of local markets, profit taking by distributors and retailers. It's hard for me to escape the conclusion that in a competitive market, a 14-cent increase in production or distribution costs will not result in a $2 increase for the consumer. To say that it will defies logic, and it defies the evidence, which is why the real question, the question I hope this committee will focus on in its effort to measure the impact of this tax proposal on local brewers, is the extent to which beer drinkers would be willing to pay an additional 14 cents per serving. We believe they would. Before I conclude, let me touch on just a couple of other arguments you may hear today. First, opponents may ask, shouldn't wine and liquor drinkers be taxed as well? Of course they should, and they are. Oregon's wine tax is low, about 4 cents per glass, but it isn't the lowest in the country. And drinkers of distilled spirits in Oregon pay some of the highest prices in the country, partly to support OLCC's warehousing, distribution, and retail infrastructure, but also to produce approximately $135 million per year that gets paid out to the state general fund and to local governments, partly for alcohol and drug addiction treatment. Second, opponents may tell you that states with the lowest beer excise taxes are also the states with the biggest beer production, states like Missouri, Colorado, Wisconsin, and Oregon. The implication is that low taxes are necessary to grow a great industry. While that correlation exists, I would humbly submit to you that opponents may well have the causal relationship reversed. States with the biggest beer producers are the states where breweries have the most political clout and the greatest ability to help keep taxes low. In conclusion, I want to step back a minute from the dollars and cents. We're taking part in one of Oregon's great biennial legislative traditions, the debate on the beer tax. And like some of our other perpetual debates maybe about land use, field burning, helmet laws, and various natural resource issues, I think some of the passion here results from the perception that this bill represents an attack on a way of life. It's a way of life epitomized by the pioneers who built the Oregon brewing industry, by the entrepreneurs who've expanded their market into organics and other specialty beers, and by beer-savvy consumers who know the difference between box and hops, who organize festivals celebrating local beers, who even head out to participate in the fall harvest of hops. Colleagues, I can assure you that it is not our intent to harm this great industry. The vast majority of this tax would be levied on non-Oregon beers. And I believe that Oregon's beer drinkers would happily pay an extra 14 cents for the privilege of drinking a great local beer. So my request to you, members of this committee, is to use this hearing to try to distinguish between the perception that this is an attack on our local way of life and the reality of what a 14 cent increase would really mean. But know also that we're open to conversations about how to structure this tax so it has the least impact on Oregon's great craft breweries. Should we exempt small-scale local brewers? Should we use some of the funds to help develop a microbrewery board similar to the wine board to promote local beers? We want to work with our friends in the brewing industry to make sure this proposal works for them. With that, I'll thank you for your attention and look forward to continuing the conversation with you as the session goes by.
Thank you. Who's next?
Thank you,
Senator,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to echo some of the comments of my good colleague, Representative.
And for the record.
And for the record, I'm Jackie Dingfelder, Senator, State Senator for District 23. This is my fifth time that I'm up here in front of you talking about the beer tax, and I will tell you that it does seem to be a sort of biennial exercise, but we're hoping that we can move forward with a more productive conversation this time around. I would like to echo the remarks of my colleagues that we have great support and respect for the craft brewing industry in the state. As a matter of fact, I will admit, I did sample some of the craft brewers this weekend, and I know that several of us can often be found at our neighborhood brew pubs and are very fond of them. But I'm going to talk a little bit about why we need this change. I think this is a really important part of the conversation. And as you know, and as Representative Cannon already talked about, the beer tax is not a new tax, but was first passed over 32 years ago in Oregon without any increases since. There's not many things that I know that stay the same in 32 years. Part of the reason we have this tax is to pay for the cost of alcohol use. But current prevention, treatment, and recovery services are not even moderately meeting Oregonians' needs. Let me give you some examples. In 2006, about 258,000 Oregonians experienced substance abuse problems, but less than a quarter of these folks had access to publicly funded treatment services. 32 Oregon counties identified underage drinking as one of the top three problems faced locally, yet prevention services have been nearly dismantled. Oregon has few substance abuse services specifically focused towards people with disabilities, even though substance abuse problems occur more often among this group than in the general population. And finally, in 2007, county mental health addiction programs received more than 10,000 crisis calls a month. And that's an average, of course. Second, the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse Program states that underage drinking is at epidemic proportions in Oregon. The national underage drinking rate has gone down, while Oregon's has only gone up. The Governor's Council, as well as the Institute of Medicine's National Academies of Science and other groups, recommend raising alcohol taxes as an effective way to begin addressing the problem. So I want to emphasize that a small investment now means millions saved in the short and long term. You may have read or seen references to the Eco Northwest report from 2008 that estimates untreated substance abuse costs in Oregon at $5.93 billion each year for such items as $113 million for health care, $4.15 billion in lost earnings, $967 million for costs such as law enforcement, criminal justice, and social welfare. This works out to about $1,600 per Oregonian per year. While the dollar figures are high, they don't do an adequate job of expressing what costs we are truly bearing when more children are being placed in foster care due to substance abuse problems at home. The only place many Oregonians can access some kind of addiction programs is in jail, and serving on Judiciary Committee, that is not lost on me by any means. Many Oregonians want to help but are turned away from substance abuse programs because of insufficient capacity. And this is particularly troubling given that a recent study indicated that for every $1 we spend on treatment, we save $5.60 in other costs such as health care and public safety. Finally, this proposal relieves burdens on general fund dollars, which we all know is going to be is of great concern to us, not just for balancing this budget, but for the 2009-11 budget. So this bill, House Bill 2461, will free up about $114 million in general fund dollars that are currently spent on addiction programs and services. It will also fund ballot measure 57's requirement to provide treatment for certain offenders. Otherwise, that money will come from general fund. Finally, fully funding these two items with the revenue generated in this bill will mean that there will be more dollars left in the general fund, which can then be used for schools or human services. So in closing, prevention, treatment, and recovery programs in Oregon are looking at severe cuts the next biennium. However, eliminating these programs not only means that we will have less people that are being treated, but it means that we're going to pay more later. My co-sponsors and I support House Bill 2461 in order to help decrease our costs and save taxpayer dollars and make Oregon a healthier and safer place to live. I thank you for allowing us to testify today. I'm going to hand off
to you.
Thank
you very much. Representative Dembrough.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, I just have a couple of quick...
For the record.
For the record, I'm Representative Michael Dembrough from House District 45. I just want to make a couple of quick comments in support of my colleagues here. I'm very appreciative of them for taking the lead on this issue. This is my first time in the House, so I don't have the history with this issue that my colleagues do. For me, the reason that I signed on to this effort was that it made a lot of sense. During the election season, I knocked on thousands of doors, spoke to a lot of people about our fiscal situation in the state, and actually this even overlapped in the early stages with the campaign for the Healthy Kids Initiative, and I heard at doorstep after doorstep, how about the beer tax? Why has it taken 30 years to increase the beer tax? And I really didn't have a good answer for them, but I assured them that that would be a question that I would ask when I came into session. One of the pleasures of my fate here has been to be appointed to the Human Services Committee. And sitting in that committee, I have seen firsthand the human face of the statistics that Senator Dingfelder has talked about, the enormous human and social cost of alcohol and drug addiction in this state, and the huge need that we have to fund services that are increasingly proven to be effective in treatment if the problem is caught early and aggressive treatment programs are pursued. We need a stable funding source for that, and the beer tax is a logical one. I just finally want to say that I echo Representative Cannon's urging of us to be creative and flexible with this, that the legislation as is before you does not need to be the bottom line at the end of the road. When representatives of the craft brewing industry came and talked to me a couple of weeks ago, I thanked them. I said that, you know, you guys have had a dramatically positive impact on my quality of life over the last 20 years, and I deeply believe that. And I would do nothing to harm that industry. I really believe in it, and but I'm also convinced that we can craft a solution that will not only protect but will also encourage that industry while we come up with the needed dollars for addiction services.
Thank you. Mr. Bischoff, sure. I note that you have distributed a quite long piece with attachments, and I assure you that the committee will study it carefully. If you could summarize, it would be very helpful.
I'd be happy to. Thank Representative you. Barnhart, committee members, my name is Don Bischoff. I'm Legislative Assistant to Senator Bill Morsette, who couldn't be here this morning because he's next door chairing his own committee, trying to figure out how to spend all the money that you folks are going to raise in this committee. One of the advantages of coming last is that I don't have to cover my lengthy testimony. I would like to point out, to emphasize something Representative Cannon mentioned. This is not the 15-cent drink tax or the $49.61 a barrel tax is not a figure that was picked out of the air. We started with a study that was done by DHS and three other agencies in a year-long effort, and published a document called Oregon Speaks, which I think you've all received a copy of at some point. That spells the need for maintaining a logical and effective system of treatment and prevention programs in the state, a system that is endangered by the budget cuts proposed by Governor Kulongoski. So there's a very definite logic. I've spelled that out in my written testimony. My main purpose here today is just to try to answer any technical questions that you might have about the bill itself.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel?
Well, just a quick one, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
It could go to either Representative or Mr. Bishop. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just trying to clarify once again how you got to the 15 cents, and it sounds like what you're saying is to hit the level of alcohol treatment per year, it's $160 million or change, and so you got that number and backed into the 15 cents, or was there something else besides that?
Representative Brown, Chair Barnhart, that was exactly what we did. There's a chart, I think, on page 5 of that Oregon Speaks that shows how they've calculated the need over the next three biennia. If this tax were to pass intact, you would take care of all the prevention and treatment needs of the state for the next three biennia. So it was definitely built on that. It was built with the idea of Measure 57 in mind to allow somewhere between $40 and $48 million to cover the treatment that's mandated under under Measure 57.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Cannon and Mr. Bishop. I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but on a percentage basis, how much of the beer consumed in Oregon is created in Oregon as compared to that which is brought in from out of state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, my understanding is, and I'm sure there are others in the room who could confirm or deny this, but my understanding is that approximately 12% of the beer consumed in the state of Oregon is brewed in the state of Oregon, and that's a figure that I think I derived from the Brewers Guild website, so we'll be corrected if that's not the case.
And there are people here who can, I'm certain, give us a clear answer of that. Question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your testimony. I have a couple of things to sort of make you aware of as we move ahead through the panels that we have this morning. I'm going to try to alternate between those in favor of the bill and those opposed. We've heard a panel in favor. I'm also going to try to make certain that we get in everybody who's indicated they're from more than 100 miles away. So, again, I appreciate your being very brief today. I'm going to call Kurt Widmer, and I'm going to butcher some names here, so bear with me. Jamie Floyd, Christian Ettinger. And while they're coming up, I want to note that I have received a testimony from Will Rogers, the president of the Oregon State University Americans for Prosperity, opposing the bill, and I'm going to ask that that be entered in the record. That came from Representative Gelser. Gentlemen.
Good morning. I'm Kurt Widmer, co-founder of Widmer Brothers Brewing. Chairman Barnhart, I'll apologize. You're going to have to suffer through my preamble here for the third time, but I believe it's even more applicable now than ever. If 25 years ago a group had approached the Oregon legislature promising their industry would produce 5,200 direct jobs and over 10,000 indirect jobs, if they promised that their industry would be clean, green, popular with Oregonians, and provide a uniquely Oregon attraction for visitors that would be greater than the state wineries, if they would forgo any tax breaks, credits, or subsidies, plus agree to pay tens of millions of dollars for the privilege of doing business in Oregon, what would legislators have said 25 years ago? In fact, that is the history of Oregon craft brewing industry. We've grown an iconic industry built on uniquely Oregon advantages in people, agriculture, place, lifestyle, and tourism. Oregon legislators have encouraged the growth of the Oregon craft beer industry by keeping beer taxes here competitive with neighboring states. Only one of the top 50 craft brewing companies in the U.S. in 2007 was in a top 10 beer excise tax state. Meanwhile, Oregon is home to 7 of the top 50 craft brewing companies in the U.S. By any measure, this is a story of success. The sponsors of this bill are selling this to consumers by saying that they will pay 15 cents per beer. The 15 cents per 12-ounce glass or 20 cents per pint is incorrect in that it's fine to say that retailers and wholesalers should not take any markup because there's no increased cost to them. In fact, our customers, not only beer drinkers, but wholesalers and retailers, are suffering just as we all are in this economic climate. Excise taxes are a very, very inefficient way for the state to collect revenue because of the way that it's structured in Oregon. The state collects, in fact, 20 cents per pint. Beer drinkers, whether you want to argue about the math or not, will pay an increased amount at a time when they're all suffering the same as we are. It's a failed logic to suggest that because a tax hasn't been raised in 32 years, it's time to raise it. In fact, there are 17 other states that have not raised their tax in a much longer period of time. It's equally failed logic to suggest that people drink more in difficult times. Our industry is not impervious to the tough times that we all face. Our beer drinkers are hurting, our customers are hurting, our retailers are hurting. I would urge you to vote no on House Bill 2461. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if you would leave the mic a little bit further away, it won't distort quite so much.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead.
Chairman Barnhart, Revenue Committee members, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Jamie Floyd. I am part owner and brewmaster for Ninkasi Brewing Company in Eugene, Oregon, and I am opposed to House Bill 2461. I have been in this industry for 14 years, slowly building my resume through hard work and endless hours of labor in a slow economy to start my own business. Ninkasi Brewing is a brewery and not a brew pub. We sell none of our beer as a retailer. In fact, under Oregon law, we cannot sell less than 5 gallons at a time. We distribute for ourselves locally and use wholesalers to sell our beer to retailers as it is set up by the three-tier system. All of our revenue comes from a very narrow stream of sales of kegs and cases of bottled beer. Ninkasi has enjoyed success in terms of growth. We have been open for just 2.5 years. We started as two people, Nikos and I, producing, selling, delivering, and promoting our beers. Since that short period of time, we have grown into 15 full-time family wage employees and 3 part-time employees. We are very proud of creating real manufacturing jobs for people in our community at a time when big companies like Hynix, who experienced incredible tax breaks, closed down after sending their profits to Korea, leaving their promise of job creation behind in our community with less income tax collected and people with no family wage jobs. All of our revenue gets put back into the business. We do not make a big salary and do not get giant end-of-the-year bonuses like those on Wall Street. We take our profits and pay off our debts and use revenue to grow our business, not our wallets. This tax proposal will completely hinder the growth we have experienced. I have been called unreasonable for defending my industry. Editorial boards for newspapers have asked me to create another tax on my business to help legislators fix our economy. I already have. I risked everything to own my own business. I pay taxes like everyone else. I pay another tax for the privilege to brew beer. We pay property tax on the land Ninkasi sits on. My employees pay income tax. We are working on getting health care for our employees, which we ourselves do not even have yet. We added family wage manufacturing jobs to a state that is one of the worst rates of decline nationally for that sector. We support nonprofits by donating beer at cost so that they can raise money needed to fund programs of all kinds that need help. I have heard that this bill was put forward to begin discussion of what the tax should really be. Even if this bill would propose to tax a third of this outrageous size, it would still be a 600% increase in a tax, making it still one of the highest in the nation and much higher than surrounding states, should folks drive to Washington to buy beer. What I feel is unreasonable is that there is no discussion about what type of tax it should be. It is sold as a sales tax to the public, but isn't. It's $25 per keg. That's more than 25% of the money I currently get to sell a keg of beer to a wholesaler. I have to pay that when it is made, not sold. Liberty Bank, the City of Eugene, and the Small Business Administration lent us money to start our business based on our ability to show we can pay back our debts reasonably. Our financials would not look so good if we had to pay the government 25% of our gross income. I have heard discussion of changing the three-tier system so that the production tax can even look more like a sales tax. I do not understand the logic in that. A sales tax is simply that, a tax paid at the time of purchase. There is also no discussion of taking the $155 million already collected by the sale of alcohol in Oregon and using it for the programs in distress instead of it largely going to the general fund. There is no legislation to hold Pfizer responsible for creating the methamphetamine problem that has burdened our prisons, our recovery programs, and our personal property. And finally, there is no discussion about a real tax reform that would lessen the burden of individual businesses being taxed to pay for a whole state's problems. Where is the discussion about a statewide sales tax that would allow for roads to be fixed by trucks who drive on them and buy gas, to generate recovery money from people who buy over-the-counter drugs, and yes, money from those who choose to buy a beer? What will you say when our industry has to lay off workers, creating more stress on the budget by not collecting income tax? What will those who work for us say when we tell them they're on their own for health care? What will all the print journals say who think it's our turn to pay when we no longer have money to advertise with them? What will all the nonprofits say when we can't donate beer so that we can pay for one of the set of social problems? What will consumers say when the 15 cents they think they're getting is $1.25? Thank you for your consideration. I know you have your work cut out for you to fix our ailing economy. So do I. Please allow me to continue what I started. Allow me to be a part of Oregon Solution one job at a time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Chairman Barnhart and representatives of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you guys. I'm Christian Ettinger, brewmaster and owner of Hopworks Urban Brewery. I'm opposed to this House bill. As brewmaster and owner of Hopworks Urban Brewery, I'm proud to tell the committee that our Eco Brew Pub employs 55 hardworking Oregonians and contributes $3 million in sales to the economy. The average production cost for a barrel of our beer is $140. The proposed tax increase of $49.61 would raise this cost from 2%
to roughly 36% overnight, representing the single largest cost in the production of our beer. Our projected 2009 state privilege tax liability would climb from $13,000 for 2009 to $261,000. The law of demand states that the higher the price, the lower the quantity demanded. The resulting price increase would have a devastating impact on our sales volume and revenue. Downsizing and job loss would be the inevitable result. Hopworks intends to open a second facility in the Portland area within the next 18 months. This new facility would provide 30 jobs and potentially $2 million in sales to the local economy. If House Bill 2461 passes, this proposed location would most likely be moved to Vancouver, Washington, out of state, where the current tax rate is 478, and they have a carve-out for 478. It's 808 for breweries exceeding 260,000 barrels sold in the state. California breweries pay $6.20 per barrel, and Idaho breweries pay $4.65 per barrel. So those are the options. As small business operators, we have an option to locate our business where we see fit. House Bill 2461 sends a clear message that craft breweries are no longer a welcome part of Oregon fabric. In this economy, House Bill 2461 would have a crippling effect on our industry and the communities we belong to. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Boone.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick one. Mr. Widmer, you mentioned this briefly in your remarks, but can you comment a little more specifically? As I understand it, in most economic downturns, beer consumption is generally inelastic. In fact, I've even heard that it goes up. Can you comment on what's happening during this current economic downturn for all three of you with your businesses and sales?
We've seen it slow down dramatically, and we're a public company. We laid off 14 people in November as a result of this slowdown. Unfortunately, the reality is that we and all the craft brewers in this room operate at the highest level from a pricing standpoint. We don't have the economies of scale that can match Heineken or Corona, so our beer is priced out there where it has to be for us to make a reasonable return, and that's the segment that is and will be the most heavily impacted. We've seen excise tax increases in Alaska and Utah recently, the last 10 years, and beer sales declined in both those cases pretty dramatically. Alaska, it took them 5 years for the sales to recover back to where they were pre-increase.
For our business, what we've noticed, we don't produce quite as much, so our numbers are a little harder to verify right now, but more people are buying beer and taking it home rather than going out, which really is putting a tremendous pressure on the restaurants and taverns that are our main customers, or at least represent over half of our customer base right now. So what we're seeing is basically a domino effect for what's happening in the food service industry right now. And that's what our main concern is making sure that our customers can get through this economic times too.
We've seen a slight slowdown in the wholesale end of our business beginning in the first quarter of this year. And it's only logical that with the most likely impact being a dollar pint at the, or dollar more per pint at the faucet for the customer, inevitably consumption will go down, as will the resulting revenue for our businesses and the tax base.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Benz.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Widmer, perhaps you could comment a little more on the actual reason that the folks down the distributive line actually have to raise the price more than the 15 cents. The 14 cents per glass. There's been some suggestion that tax could be passed on easily with no additional markup, and I'm unclear on why that can't happen.
Well, let me be clear. Chairman Barnhart, Representative Vance, we do not control pricing after it leaves the brewery. That would be a federal offense for us to even remotely try to do that. Through our pricing, we can suggest where it lands to the consumer, but that's all we can do is suggest. I can tell you that my company would not be able to withstand this kind of an increase. Our excise tax in Oregon alone would go from around $250,000 a year to over $4.5 million a year. And you can look at our financials online, and I can tell you that there's not that kind of margin there. So we would pass along virtually as much of that as we could, let's say 100%. And then we can't control, but I can tell you that retailers and wholesalers have margin structures that have work for them historically. I mean, we have no way of setting what they price in the environment. But these projections that we came up with were not just out of the sky. It's what they have traditionally done by way of a markup. And, you know, you might have read the Oregonian editorial, and I was accused of using a back-of-the-napkin calculation. Well, in fact, I came up with $1.36 a pint for the increase. Retailers aren't going to stop at $1.36. I rounded up to $1.50 for, excuse me, for exaggerating that. But that's, in fact, how I got to that number. And that translates directly to a $2 per six-pack increase. And, you know, I thank you for asking that question, because we know that anytime there's an increase at this level, beer sales go down. So I'd like to point out that the dollar amount that was projected that the state would benefit from, in fact, that is predicated on the fact that beer sales are totally elastic and that people will pay any amount. In fact, we know that it's inelastic and that at a certain price level, people stop buying more beer and the state will collect less revenue as a result.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jenna Nickel, Stephanie Soares Pump, Bill Hall. Commissioner Hall, since you're there first, why don't you begin?
Thank you, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you for hearing what I know is a very controversial bill with open minds. For the record, my name is Bill Hall, and I am a Lincoln County Commissioner and am the Vice Chair of the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Programs. I come before you today representing the Association of Oregon Counties, where I chair the Human Services Steering Committee. AOC this year has reaffirmed its support for a beer tax increase dedicated to addictions treatment. And that shouldn't surprise anyone. AOC was involved in passing the original beer tax back in 1975 to fund addictions and mental health programs. It supported the one and only increase in the tax in 1977, and it's been part of the often lonely group that has been raising their voices on this subject without success over the past three decades. AOC still believes that A&D and mental health prevention and treatment are very much connected and would like to see additional funding for both, but appreciate this bill at least addressing the major need in A&D. AOC does have concerns about the size of the increase and would like to encourage the sponsors and opponents to work together on finding an appropriate amount. Our association doesn't want to shut down any businesses or put anyone out of work, but I think it is telling that last session, the Hood River County Board of Commissioners all signed on to a letter to legislative leadership supporting a beer tax increase, even though one of the state's most successful craft breweries is in their county. I would also like to add this isn't a partisan issue. I am a Democrat, but my Republican vice chair on the Human Services Committee, Janet Carlson, is out of town today, and she asked me to convey her continued support for a beer tax as well. As you know, counties have a statutory role as the local mental health authority. This includes responsibility for addictions prevention and treatment. As I'm sure you also know, the system has been badly underfunded for decades. The system was decimated during the 2001-2003 budget cuts. We have just barely begun to recover, and now we are looking at a governor's recommended budget that reduces addictions funding by 84%. Without adequate funding, we can never adequately perform our vital role of support for the public safety system, the child welfare system, and other services that are necessary to the health and well-being of Oregonians. Recently, I appeared before you in support of the document fee bill for affordable housing and homeless services. I want to repeat a point I made that day that I think applies equally here. There will never be enough resources to go around, even in the best of times. This is an opportunity for the legislature to address a compelling economic, health, and social need in an effective and responsible way. I urge your support for House Bill 2461.
Thank you very much.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Gina Nickel, and I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. I'm also speaking today for the Mental Health Coalition that has 13 organizations as a membership, the Oregon Medical Association, Oregon Psychiatric Coalition, and the National Association of the Mentally Ill as some of its members. The Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs supports House Bill 2461 as a permanent revenue source for funding the solution to Oregon's addictions problem. Each year, addiction to alcohol and other drugs contributes to increased costs in the public health, mental health, public safety, foster care, and education systems, as well as increased costs to workforce development and management. We know what works: prevention, treatment, and recovery supports. Please take the time. I know most of you have received this Oregon Speaks document once, twice, maybe three times. Brought it for you again. Oregon Speaks really goes into detail, a complete outline, if you will, on what Oregon should be funding now to mitigate future costs to the state in the general fund. Oregon leads the nation in the use of evidence-based practices for prevention, treatment, and recovery supports. Oregon also has an evidence-based practice management team at DHS and a tracking system that other states are watching carefully and asking questions about because Oregon is in the lead. Communities also have implemented intensive treatment and recovery services that have addicted parents at risk of entering the child welfare system and for those already in the system. Currently, 6.2% of Oregon's adults over the age of 25 are dependent or abusing alcohol or other drugs. 8.8% of Oregon's children aged 12 to 17 also abuse alcohol or other drugs. But what's really telling is between the age of 18 and 25, 20.1% of our young adults are addicted to alcohol or other drugs. In 2002-2003, we lost over 1,000 addiction counselors in communities across Oregon due to the state budget cuts. We are doing excellent work. However, only 25% of the need is being taken care of. In 2009, we are facing about 82 to 84% more cuts in what's left over. Please do not let the collapse of the community infrastructure now cause greater harm to all of us in the future. We thank you for this time. I don't want it to sound like I'm against craft brewers. Definitely not. They add to my quality of life also. But we need to make sure that we fund the nexus of the problem. Alcohol is the gateway drug, and our teenagers also need us.
Thank you.
To pay the cost. Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Stephanie Suarez-Pump, chair of the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs. Gina referenced, showed this fact sheet. I have provided for you in my testimony the fact sheet from each of your counties that shows the rate of underage drinking in your particular counties that you represent. The council is charged with assessing the economic and social impact of alcohol and other drugs in Oregon. Toward that end, we have submitted the Domino Effect 2 report. I'm hopeful that you've all gotten your copies by now. This report clearly documents our most pressing public policy issues related to addictions. The Oregon Speaks document describes the investment needed to address the level of need created by years of disinvestment in prevention and years of inadequate resources for treatment. The findings in these reports led the council to make revenue restructuring its number one priority. Increasing the beer tax is one of the most logical steps that can be taken in the goal to stabilize addiction services. The cuts we are facing in this biennium and the next look to be even more of a disinvestment than any experienced previously. This is exacerbated by the fact that we have barely begun to recover from the cuts in 2001-3. What the council doesn't understand is why we keep doing this to ourselves. Surely it must be clear that we need to diversify revenue. In the 33 years I've worked in this field, I've gone through a budget cut crisis 9 times. This is an average of every 3.66 years. We will never stabilize services and grow healthy Oregonians with that kind of a batting average. The council urges you to find the political will to diversify funding, raise revenue, and stabilize addictions funding. The bear tax is one way to do that. Oregon Speaks was developed as the result of a comprehensive statewide assessment of the need for addiction services. More than 150 people participated. Every one of your districts was represented. As you can see from the handouts given you, every one of your districts has an underage drinking problem. This is the time to act. I urge you to listen to Oregonians. I urge you to stabilize addiction funding and save lives. I, too, am a supporter of the craft beer industry. In fact, it's the only beer I'll drink. Despite that, I urge you to address the dangerous level of need we have. Pass House Bill 2461 out of committee. Give prevention, treatment, and recovery a chance.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know who is best suited to answer this question. I understand the prevention component and the value of that, but what I want to drill down to a little bit here is the treatment component. Of those treated, what is the success rate, maybe in your given counties or your programs, what is the success rate, and I guess I want to call it the recidivism rate, but that's not probably the appropriate term for this segment. So can you speak to that a little
bit? We've actually addressed that issue in the domino effect. Alcohol and drug treatment has a slightly higher success rate than other forms of healthcare treatment, such as hypertension, heart disease, and diabetes. And the relapse rate is also about the same as diabetics, for example, going off their program, people who have hypertension forgetting to take or not taking their medications, et cetera. It's about the same.
Yes, please.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Thank you. Do you have any numbers that you can give me right now on that?
Not this minute, but I can get them to you.
Thank you.
Other questions? I want to follow up on that a little bit. I note in Dr. Nichols' statement, you talk about the innovation that Oregon has, evidence-based practices leading the nation. Could you describe that in very brief terms, in addition to what Ms. Pump has already told us? And one of the issues that comes up constantly in dealing with treatment is what is its effect? Does it actually do anything useful for us? Maybe you could address that question.
Yes, Chair Barnhart, excellent question. Back in 2003, we looked at evidence-based practices, and then Max Williams was in the House, and we passed Senate Bill 267, which is the evidence-based practice bill. Several universities have been looking at a way to measure evidence-based practice. They have several programs, and Oregon has really taken the lead. And at AMH, Addictions and Mental Health Division, we have put together not only a stakeholders group, but also a management group to take a look at all the evidence-based practices and those that are promising practices to measure them to see what works not only in Oregon, but across the United States. There are over 100 evidence-based practices that have been proven to work, and we're measuring them. And I can get you a chart to show you in each county which evidence-based practices and promising practices that each county is using.
Thank you. That would be helpful. Anything else for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Gary Fish, Steve Moore, Juanita Kirkham. Thank you. great.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and start.
And I note that at least two of you have written testimony. I promise you that we will look at it. If you can summarize and keep your testimony short, that would be much appreciated. I have 6 pages of people who want to be heard.
I will do my best. I'm going to try not to repeat some of the things that Kurt Widmer said.
Thank you. And this is not directed at you, but at everyone.
Thank you very much. Thank you for allowing us to be here, Chairman Barnhart, committee members. For the record, my name is Gary Fish. I'm the founder and president of Deschutes Brewery in Bend, Oregon, and I am opposed to House Bill 2461. Deschutes Brewery was founded in 1988 in Bend. Away from the footlights of Portland, we grew our business in Bend before it was ever reported on in the New York Times. We've grown our business in the past 20 years through good times and bad, boom and bust. We have continued to grow and risk again, while our area and our industry grew as well. Being in a smaller town gave us the opportunity to be full participants in our community in innumerable ways, but mostly through our Sagebrush Classic that has raised $2 million for children and families in Central Oregon. Deschutes Brewery has grown to be one of the most respected breweries in the country. It has also grown in size. With 280 co-workers, our payroll now stands at nearly $13 million annually, including benefits, a number that would have frozen me at the genesis of this adventure. With net income in the low to mid-single digits, there is precious little room for error when dealing with these people's lives and their families, the responsibility I take above all others. With all that said, again, I come before you because our company is threatened. Each legislative session, we must leave our companies and come to Salem to defend ourselves against egregious punitive tax increases targeted at hurting local companies. If this tax is passed, Deschutes Brewery's tax bill for 2009 would go from an anticipated $220,000 to nearly $4.5 million. Meanwhile, we listen as our attackers obfuscate about the impact of this tax and even about how a market economy works. To suggest we could just simply pass along $4.2 million to the consumer is naive beyond belief. And I'll skip the next part, but say that by way of example, last year we took an 87% increase in malt cost. We took a 7% increase in glass cost, our highest significant cost. And we took a 14% increase in health care costs, an average over the last 5 or 6 years. During that time, we were able to execute in total a 5% price increase. Some of that, or most of that, ended up holding. That was opposed to about the 7 cent or the 7% increase, all of that averaged out to for us. So even with hard costs that supposedly we're supposed to be able to make a profit on, we were not able to do that. Also, just to illustrate a couple of other things, when you talk about how pricing multiplies through the three tiers, it might be useful to know that Safeway, for instance, makes its buying decisions in California. Albertsons makes its buying decisions in Minnesota. Walmart makes its buying decisions in Arkansas. Costco makes its buying decisions in Washington. They're not interested in what part of our cost is malt, hops, water, labor, or taxes. 40% on average in the nation of the cost of beer right now is taxes. Like every other company, that is a cost of doing business. So to think that that would not multiply through the system is really naive. If we were to suggest to the state that we could provide in this time frame a new industry of this scope today, how would the legislature respond? What would they commit? Yet that is exactly what we have done without asking for anything in return, except not to be hurt. Meanwhile, the legislature has provided millions to Hollywood's film and television industry to try and lure them here so they can take their dollars back to Hollywood. While the debate is raised, we have been accused of misstating facts and being pawns of the large international brewers. The real world knowledge and experience of those who have not just built companies, but an industry as well, has been dismissed. Our motives have been questioned, but our motives are clear. We are here to protect our industry, our companies, our co-workers, and our communities. We know that there is no amount the tax can be raised that will not damage all four. In the current economic climate, this is truer than ever. I recognize there are some who will disregard this testimony and dismiss these facts. I'm hoping, though, that there are some who will listen and realize that while Oregon may have some real problems, punishing Oregon breweries and their people is not the way to fix them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, committee members, my name is Steve Moore. I own Philadelphia Steaks and Hoagies. For most years, I'm probably one of the smallest, if not the smallest, microbrewery in the state of Oregon. I'd like to start by conceding the fact that I understand alcohol is a major problem. There's no doubt it extracts its cost in society. I sit on two committees at the Liquor Commission, and I've become very aware of that. However, it's this legislative body in the governor's office that up until this point has taken the money that is raised by the Liquor Commission and only felt a priority to put 5% of that back into alcohol problems. 95% is distributed to the general fund. We collect the tax, we pay the tax, but it's this body in the governor's office who write the budgets and decide where the money goes. I find that a problem. I have 9 employees. 6 of them have health insurance. I'm a small slice of Oregon's economy. I'm trying to do my best to hold it. I haven't raised prices in a year and a half, and because of that, I'm able to hold my customer counts. My employees are not getting all the hours they want, but I'm keeping them together. I'm not here looking for a stimulus package or any handouts. I think I'm holding my piece in my little slice of Oregon, as small as it may be. My tax last year was only $338 for the beer I did. I only do 130 barrels for the year. That tax would jump to $6,700. I did $48,000 in beer sales last year. That's a huge increase. The other thing I'd like to address is this 14 or 15 cents per glass. Well, I'm selling it by the pint. It's 20 cents, and you want to know where the markup is. Well, in my place, I have 27 feet of beer lines. I have 12 different lines. I clean the lines once a week because I'm a craft brewer and I don't filter my beer. I'm dumping over 300 ounces of beer down the drain every Monday morning to clean my lines. Then I wash it, I flush it with water, and I flush the water back out with beer. That is beer that is going down the drain that I am not able to recover a penny of, so I have to pick up that tax on other beer that I have coming in. The average restaurant has 75 to 125 feet of beer lines. You go into a Chili's and the beer is at the far corner of the building. And a lot of places may only do it twice a week, but with a craft brew as strong as it is here, we're not running 2 or 3 beer lines anymore. They're running 8, 9, 10 beer lines. Autzen Stadium has 2.5 kegs of beer in their beer lines alone. Every time Autzen Stadium cleans their taps, they dump 2.5 kegs of beer down the drain. Okay? I don't filter my beer, as I mentioned, so at the bottom of a keg, I've got beer left in my keg. It has to get tossed out. I'm not getting 100% yield out of my kegs. I shake that keg, there's sediment in there, the beer gets tossed out. We're also educating the public as to what different beers are. We're encouraging them to try things. We give out lots of samples at the taps, lots and lots. Can I try this? Can I try that? We give out lots of those. I have a foam issue. I don't have a chemist on site or expensive equipment. So have you ever stood at a tavern and watched the glass half full of foam? They kind of tip it sideways, and the beer foam pours out the top, and the beer line slowly crawls up the top. That's why this is a production cost, not a tax. If once I got a full glass of beer, I could hit the 15 cents. After everything is said and done, that'd be a different story. I'm not getting 100% yield. I'm not getting 100% yield at all. I have employee issues, giving their friends beer, maybe out-and-out theft. I have to recover those costs on my markup. We give away a lot of free, I get 4, 5, 6 requests a week for coupons for food and beer and things like that. I give away a lot of that stuff. All that stuff has to come back from the beers that I am able to actually get cash for. I pay my insurance on my volume of sales. If my beers have to go up a buck, that my insurance at some point is going to go up a dollar also. Liquor liability is very expensive. One of the biggest items they look when they look at liquor liabilities, a percentage of beer to food. If I raise my beers a dollar a piece without raising my food, my liquor liability percentage tweaks, and that goes up. So, I mean, these are just some of the things of why it's not 15, 14, 20 cents a piece. I think that's all I'd have to say at this point, but thank you very much.
Thank you. That's very helpful. New topics, new information. Please.
I'll try to help you out with some new information. Thank you for allowing me to be here this morning, Chair Barnhart and House Revenue Committee members. My name is Juanita Kirkham. I live in Florence, Oregon. I came more than 100 miles to be here today. I am in a different situation than my fellow brewers. I'm a part-time brewer. I am a human service provider. I coordinate welfare reform in Florence, Oregon. So I know what drug issues are all about in our community and in our state. I chose to be a brewer because 6 years ago, Human Services had a financial shortfall, and my coworker was laid off. And I was like, oh, dear, I'm next. I'm the last coworker there is. I'm the last worker in the program, and we're going to have another 82% decrease in human service budget for welfare reform. And they've told me that I am not going to be spared this time. And so I opened the brewery to have something to fall back on. I'm hoping that I will still have the brewery when I do not have a job July 1st in human services. I have a couple questions for some other folks that stated, Senator Dingfelder stated that the drug issues with state foster care are a huge issue for us. I personally have had a foster child. I had a foster child for 6 months. The parent was not in drug rehab for alcohol. The parent was in drug rehab for methamphetamine. I deal with drug-addicted people every day in my day job, and I'm not aware of any client that I have that has an addiction with craft breweries. If they have an alcohol addiction at all, it is distilled spirits or imported beer. To make it short, I just want to say that this bill will be hard for all the small breweries. What is not certain is whether it will affect change. As I said, I work directly with the addicts in my community. What I don't see is mandated drug rehab working. It may work at a very small percentage, and a speaker before us said she'd get those numbers, and I would love to see those numbers. I'd love to see the recidivism rate of mandated drug rehab. The other issue is my husband works in Oregon Youth Authority, and for the beer industry to have to pay for Measure 57 to mandate drug rehab for prisoners, I just feel it's an unfair tax. If we could find another way to generate the money and tax all of the industries involved, find out a way to tax illegal drugs, that would be a really, we'd be a very wealthy state.
That would be a great trick if we could pull it off.
The bottom line for me is beer consumption has gone down 5%, the wine industry has gone up 19%, and spirits have gone up 33%, and the state of Oregon controls spirits. So I hope and encourage you that you will find a better way to mandate drug rehab and find a way to finance it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, if I may. I find these testimonies very interesting. And somewhat compelling on both sides. But I do want to assure people that no matter what we do, this is not a direct attack on anybody. And to state that, it offends me somewhat. So no matter what we do, I guarantee you it's not a direct attack on anyone.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Robert Whelan, Shelley Kimball, Andra Braga. I'm not sure I've got the names right, but I think you probably know who you are. Dr. Whelan.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair Bernhardt and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Robert Whelan. I'm an economist with the firm Echo Northwest. I'm here to present the study results that I did along with two of my colleagues about a year ago on the economic cost of drug and alcohol abuse in Oregon. Just do want to make it clear that I don't have an opinion about the tax. I haven't studied the tax, the merits of it, anything of that sort. My focus is just on the cost of drug and alcohol abuse. Back in December of 07, we were asked by the Oregon Nurses Foundation and a program sponsored by Associated Oregon Industries to estimate the cost of substance abuse on Oregon's economy. And what we did was we based our analysis on previous research and applied data on the demographics of Oregon and the economy of Oregon to it, to estimate the cost of substance abuse by health care, lost production, and all the other costs like police. And what we found was that for drug abuse, we estimated the total cost was $2.7 billion a year. For alcohol abuse, it was a little higher, $3.2 billion a year. And all told, it was about $5.9 billion. This was for the year 2006. It's probably a little higher now. That ends up to be about $1,600 a person, as was said before, and it was 4% of the gross domestic product of the state. The biggest cost item in from substance abuse and for alcohol as well as drugs, by the way, is lost work. And I have to tell you, most of my work at Echo Northwest is with the private sector, business people. And over the last 12 years, in my dealing with those individuals and asking them, you know, what are your biggest problems in terms of the economy working in the state? And I often expect people to say taxes or roads or some other thing. But usually the number one problem is getting good people, getting workers who can pass drug and alcohol tests. It is really a chronic problem. And it was very clear to me that it puts a drag on the economy, lowers the standard of living in the state, lowers the success rate in the state, and hurts families. So that's what we found out. I can answer any other questions about the economy, but that's my testimony.
Thank you. Is your study public?
Yes, it is.
And is there a URL for it?
There is.
If you would supply that to the committee, that then at some later time, that would allow us to look it up, and we would appreciate that. Are there other questions for Dr. Whalen? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Whalen, it's good to see my friend and colleague here before the committee. I have a couple of questions just in general about tax theory for you as an economist.
Mm-hmm.
Could you describe just generally what are the criteria in evaluating a tax and whether or not a tax should be raised? Is it willingness to pay relative to other states, length of time? What are the criteria to look at?
Well, relative to other states is one thing you can look at. In this case, you'd be concerned that people would cross the border and purchase the product. That's a factor. The tax here is less than it is in the states around it. Another is the ability of the person being taxed to pass that tax on to consumers, the elasticity. As the fellow from Deschutes Brewing said, he had higher costs and was unable to pass them all down. So the tax burden would not fully flow through to the retail buyer in this case. Another one is who's affected, who pays the tax. Is the person paying the tax a recipient of any of the benefits that the tax goes to pay for? So if you tax parking at a state park and the people who use the state park park there, they're paying in part for what they use. That's another criteria, I suppose.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in general, I understand you have not had time to look at the specific tax proposal and evaluate it. Would you characterize this sort of tax as being a progressive tax or a regressive tax?
I honestly don't know. You'd have to look at beer consumption. What you're asking about is would poorer people pay a disproportionate share of the tax? It's not clear to me whether it would or not. I just honestly don't know.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. For the record, my name is Shelley Kimball. I come here from Columbia Community Mental Health, which is in St. Helens, Oregon, Columbia County. I was asked by the executive director to come down and just touch briefly on what addiction services means to me. And to just, I'm going to sum it up as briefly as possible. I drank and used for 23 years. I raised 3 children in my addiction. My oldest son went into his addiction prior to me getting sober. Once I got sober, which I accessed through Columbia Community Mental Health, I went into inpatient treatment. I accessed their transitional housing program. I accessed outpatient services and every other service that I could get my hands on because I knew that I could not be a productive mother unless I got sober. With that, I was fortunate enough 2 years later to go back and apply to work for the same agency that helped me to get sober, and I'm grateful to say that I've worked for that agency for 5.5 years. I have done lots of different things with them. I do work in inpatient treatment. I started with support staff. I've worked my way up to admissions coordinator. I'm in the process of getting a CADC and my associates to become a therapist. And, you know, so addiction services to me saves lives. My oldest son is now sober. He's almost 25 years old. He's expecting my first grandchild. My oldest daughter, who's now 18, who did graduate from high school, was a cheerleader, and she's going on to college also, and I have still one child at home that luckily I get to be a part of his life and, you know, basketball and all those things that teenagers do. So, you know, addiction services to me means that we're putting families back together, and that's why to me addiction services is so important. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
Hi, my name is Audra Braga, and I'm a recovering alcoholic methamphetamine addict. My sobriety date is September 9th, 2004, and I drank and used drugs for 20 years. It started at a very early age. I chose beer because it was cheap, and I didn't plan on it taking my life. And I lost my children, lost three of my kids to DHS, and had to work really hard at getting my life back. And I was the one that everyone had so much hopes and promise in and disappointed a lot of people. And I always maintained grades and everything. And, you know, I gained my children. I got my children back. I had to work really hard with DHS, and I now, too, work at Columbia Community Mental Health. I've been clean and sober for 4 years, and I now get to deal with my little kids who have they have curiosity. You know, my son asks me, how does it feel to be drunk? You know, how much is beer? You know, he asks me these questions, and I have an 18-year-old that has never drank, done drugs, or smoked a cigarette in her life, and there's my kids that I drug through addiction and foster homes, and now I get to try to undo all of that, you know, so I'm very grateful and thankful for residential alcohol and drug and treatment. They gave me a second chance at life, so thank you.
Thank you. I know it's not easy for the two of you to come here and tell us about your history and experience, and we appreciate your doing that. Mm-hmm. Are there any questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today. Irene Fermat, Darren Welsh, and Gail Goschi. I may have... While they're getting settled, I'm going to let you know that we're going to go until 10 o'clock this morning. The House convenes at 10:15. And so we need a little break. If you don't get to testify today and you want to testify, we will reopen the hearing on Wednesday. Is that right, Paul? That's the time we have available is Wednesday morning. So we'll do the best we can to get through as many as we can today. I'm most of the way through the first two pages of six. Please.
Okay. Good morning, Chairman and committee members. I appreciate the chance to be speaking here today. My name is Irene Fermat. I'm the CEO and founder of Full Sail Brewing Company, and I'm opposed to House Bill 2461. When I first started Full Sail over 20 years ago, I was in retrospect idealistic and a bit naive. I certainly hope I'm still idealistic, but I'm no longer naive. I understand that there are people who really do not like the business that we're in. But I believe over all the times that I have been coming down to Salem that the majority, the very large majority, supports my business and has a belief that Oregon breweries and Oregon products have added value to this economy. So it is in that spirit, Representative Riley, that I'll address my remarks. If this bill had been structured to do the most harm to Oregon craft beer, it could not have been more successful. And I'll address two specific points why. First one, a production excise tax increase does the most harm to the breweries that sell the most beer in the state of Oregon. Secondly, any dramatic change in the price increase hurts those at the highest end of the scale, a point that was brought before. Those are two specific characteristics to full sale and to Oregon craft brewers. There has been a lot of talk back and forth about the 15 cents a drink. I would propose a really simple solution. I'll show you my invoices. I'll show you what I charge our distributor. Full sale charges less than $4 a six-pack to our distributor. You all know what the retail price is. That's not top secret. $7.99 a six-pack. That's how the price gets marked up through the system. We charge less than $80 a keg to our distributor. Everybody knows a pint of beer is about $6 for craft beer. There are 110 servings. Going back to after loss, real servings, 110 servings, $660 in revenue. That's a markup in the system. Representative Cannon may be talking economics in theory, but in 20 years, this is the reality of the system. We may like it to be carved out. We may like it to not be marked up. But as long as you have a production excise tax in place, that is the way it's going to reflect to the consumer. Or the other choice we could have, from not raising our six-pack $7.99 to $9.99, which is pretty frightening in this economy, is to try to absorb a cost that goes from $2.60 a barrel to $51 a barrel. That would make it be the largest per-barrel cost of any cost that we bear. It's unbearable. I'll just like to close with my personal experience of what this is doing to my company. Last Thursday, we sat down with our management team to go over our financial results and to finalize our plans for this year. For the first time in 20 years, we're not moving forward. We're really challenging if we're going to do cost of living increases, how we're going to absorb health insurance, how we're going to be replacing staff. No company can function with this potential devastating increase looming over it. I find it very sad that our management meeting spent more time talking about Oregon's tax increase on craft brewers than the most scary economy that I think any of us have ever experienced. So I would just hope that you really look at this bill, look at the facts about how it really works in the marketplace that we have to work in, look at the differentials we deal with in the marketplace, and not just look at a bill that was taken with a social need of $150 million divided by 3 million barrels and come up with an arbitrary number that puts us at the absolute highest of any beer tax in the country. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chairman Barnhart and members of the committee, I have written testimony that I'm presenting as well as written testimony for two other hop growers from Oregon. For the record, my name is Gail Goshi. I'm vice president of Goshi Farms in Silverton, Oregon, and I'm opposed to House Bill 2461. My family farm grows hops. We will be harvesting our 105th crop of our annual hops this coming August. That number of years as a producing hop farm in Oregon is not unique. We are all multi-generational Oregon family businesses. However, for the majority of these 100-plus years of hop production, the end users of our commodity was unknown to us as growers. About 25 years ago, that disconnect began to change. Oregon hop growers now enjoy a wonderful partnership with our state's craft brew industry. Not only are we able to sell our commodity locally, but we enjoy direct communication between grower and brewer. That's unique for an agricultural commodity. Oregon ranks second in U.S. production with a temperate climate that allows growers to produce aroma hops of varieties that are almost exclusively used by craft brewers. Our businesses rely on each other. Researchers around the world are studying the many natural health benefits of hops, anti-carcinogen, anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial. Hops used as a natural hormone replacement for women. But until the years of science catches up with the enthusiasm and intuition of hop growers, there's only one use for hops, and that's in the production of beer. Thank you for your time this morning and your consideration of the partnership of Oregon hop growers and Oregon craft brewers and the impact this bill will have on both of our businesses.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this morning. For the record, my name is Darren Welch. I'm the head brewer and one of the partners in the Pelican Pub and Brewery in Pacific City, and I am opposed to House Bill 2461. I started over 20 years ago as an enthusiastic home brewer who dreamed of one day owning and running a brewery. I pursued my passion for brewing for many years as a home brewer, through college and my first career, before joining the ranks of professional brewers at a brew pub actually out in Wisconsin. Moving back home to Oregon to open the Pelican Pub and Brewery was only the first of many lucky opportunities that I have enjoyed in my career so far. The success of the Pelican Pub and Brewery has been the result of many years of hard work and learning lessons about business the hard way by losing money. Those are lessons, however, that are hard to forget. Doing business on the Oregon coast is both exceptionally rewarding and extremely challenging. Our business is highly seasonal, and our peak months, we operate at a production level approximately three times greater than our slowest month. This requires a brewery that is overbuilt for most of the year and skilled staffing levels that are higher than average for a brewery of our production level. This affects our overall cost of doing business and makes our beer, by extension, inherently more expensive. We employ about 90 people during our peak months, but we carry about 60 of those employees through our slow time periods. Because we are a one-store operation, there is a limit to how much we can grow within our own four walls. Frankly, there are only so many people that we can get in and out of the Pelican Pub and Brewery. In order to grow our business, we need to create additional sales outside of our facility. This tax proposal would kill our ability to grow because it would make our already costly beer even more expensive. This tax proposal will add 31 cents to the cost of goods for each bottle of Pelican beer. Since all distributors and retailers work on a margin system, this cost will be multiplied as it makes its way to the customer. To give you a quick example, with a wholesaler operating on an average 30% margin and a retailer operating at an average 35% margin, this will translate for our beer to an additional 68 cents per bottle. This will definitely hurt sales and stifle our growth. This tax would cost us about $75,000 per year in additional taxes. Currently, our business brings about 6% to the bottom line. Not spectacular, but we've been making gradual improvements over the years. This improvement allows us to consider growth opportunities and to have a meaningful conversation with a banker. If our profitability suddenly dropped by 30%, as this tax would do to us, our chance of obtaining financing would be next to zero. $75,000 for our business is the equivalent of about two full-time brewery employees. $75,000 could buy us three additional tanks. We have an important tank manufacturer here in Oregon, JB Northwest. These tanks could expand our production capacity and add jobs. This tax proposal damages our ability to succeed, grow, and create jobs. It is, in fact, an extreme disincentive to economic growth and jobs growth. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony very much.
Thank you.
We have about 23 minutes. I'm going to go next to the people who have indicated that they're more than 100 miles from the capital where they live, and I will try to get through as many of those as we can today. Debbie Jones, Mary Ann Schwab, and Ann Samuelson. Please, go ahead.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Samuelson. I'm a Clatsop County Commissioner from the North Oregon coast. I also serve on the Health and Human Services Committee and the Commission on Children and Families. To personalize this, I've actually lost a family member to the disease of addiction. I've been listening all morning, and nobody's actually said people die, and I think that's significant, and I also appreciate Representative Riley's comment. This isn't about anybody attacking anybody. This is a tough, tough thing we need to deal with in Oregon, in our counties, and in our communities, and I don't envy your work here, but it needs to be done, and it's time that it's done. I think it's important to remember that addiction is progressive and fatal, yet it is treatable and preventable. Important things to remember. When I worked in alcohol and drug treatment in the early 90s, and then I worked as a juvenile probation officer prior to being elected official, I need to tell you, I think we did a better job then. We've let a lot of this slide in Oregon, and I don't think we can continue to let that slide happen. In Clatsop County specifically, and I'll be brief, Clatsop County has three drug treatment courts. We're a county with less than 40,000 people, yet we have a pressing need for treatment, evidenced by the work of many professionals in our drug courts. I have actually personally gone to several of those graduations from those drug courts, and I will tell you it's one of the most important things I think our judges do. I asked our sheriff, Tom Bergen, in a public meeting one time, because we were talking about, you know, our jail space, everybody's lacking jail space, and I said, Sheriff, how many people are detoxing in our jail? And he said, probably 90%. So I submit to you that I don't think that's humane. People are addicted sometimes first and criminals second, and criminals should be locked up. People that do bad things to other people and create harm should be locked up, but people need treatment. And with that, I'll close.
Thank you very much. Please.
Chairman Bernhardt and committee members, my name is Debbie Jones, and I'm a prevention specialist in Wasco County. I'm with Youth Think, which is a grassroots organization of youth and adult volunteers that are trying to take on these issues, specifically the issue of underage drinking. And I can be very honest that getting up at 4:30 to come in here this morning, I probably wouldn't have done it except for this fact. According to Pacific Institute of Research and Evaluation, in 2005, underage drinkers consumed 15.3% of all alcohol sold in Oregon, totaling $278 million in sales. These sales provided profits of $135 million to the alcohol industry. That's my biggest concern. I can be honest with you and tell you I've never drank alcohol. I was fortunate to have a father who was a very responsible parent, and when I was 12 years old, sat me down and told me about the high incident of alcoholism on his side of the family, and that he could not guarantee me that one or two drinks wouldn't be enough for myself to have to go through that. I was lucky to have that. Now I deal on an everyday basis with youth that haven't had the advantages I had with parents. I've given to you a kind of, you can do your own comparison as far as the states that have the lowest beer tax per gallon and where they rank as far as their underage drinking usage, as well as the ones that have the highest beer tax. I'll let you look at those own comparisons. But to me, it's kind of a visual. If you imagine a scale, and the more our youth drink, the more and I will give the alcohol industry the benefit of the doubt, the unintended consequences happen. And as Ms. Pump mentioned, Oregon's youth do drink at a higher rate than the nation. So as the more that we're drinking, the more that costs are that we're up here, and we are at that tipping point. All I would ask is that you could recognize that and help us to get more to a level playing field. Our youth are hurting. We see that every day. as a prevention specialist, we're doing everything we can. Our county takes advantage, as I'm sure several counties here, of the Drug-Free Communities Grant. We have 2 more years of that funding. At that point, we will lose that because you can only have it for a certain amount of time. We do everything we can with our A&D funds. Those for our county do not even bring in enough for a full-time position. Our youth need help, and speaking for the youth in Wasco County, we'd ask you to try and figure out some way to help them, as also all the youth in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Representative Barnhart and committee, I beg your indulgence. I misread the 100 miles. I come from Portland, Oregon.
Ah.
I said, how do I get out of this? She said, you just better go ahead. So if
you're there, so go ahead.
I'm Mary Ann Schwab, a retired high school secretary who's been lobbying with Oregon Partnership with Time for a Dime 203, A Dime a Drink 205, Malt Beverage Recovery Clause 207. Once again, I urge your support with House Bill 2461. I believe it's time the beer industry pays its fair share to the social and economic costs of its products. One solution, in listening to your previous speakers, could be why not pay the 5 cents at the cash register just as we do the bottle deposit? That saves all of these middle people. You hear the frustration over and over and over again. Their own system needs to be reviewed back after Prohibition in 1933. I'm pretty good at finding things, but I can't find the records of where the committees did this back in 1933. And I realize the tax came at 1977. Many people in this room have been on the planet shorter than this beer tax. We do need to change this. And having read the 205 Oregon Community Addiction Services Investment Strategy, I understand funds would be spent for prevention, treatment, recovery systems and provide community-based services. However, it is not clear to me, reading this, how the community-based residential and outpatient services programs would be evaluated. Why not start blind studies in the correctional facilities statewide? Unlike the oversight in Measure 57, with no funds enough for this, Oregon legislature mandate the evaluation with scientific methodology where individuals to participate, they have to be willing to participate, are randomly selected in 2 control groups and a treatment group. And finally, as a responsible driver, when I think about the 15 cents, I purchase car insurance, as I'm sure everybody in this room has. And truth be known, I also enjoy drinking Made in Oregon Bridgeport Blue Herring brew or two. And I consider the 15 cents increase my mini insurance policy for prevention, treatment, and recovery insurance. I urge you to get House Bill 2461 out of committee in a timely manner. These costly and painful consequences are preventable, especially deaths on the DUI. I also wear a hat with Crime Victims United and the Compassionate Friends. This affects us in so many levels. And talking about a joke that happened between your distributor, lobbyist, and myself entering an elevator here, I said, well, how are you? I said, fine. I said, not well. I understand my dime is only worth 7 cents. Robust laughter. Belly laughter. That's the way it is. It's worth nada, nothing. I said, why? And he says, that's the way it is. That's the way it always will be. It'll get in committee and stay there. By then, I was at the second floor. Got back out of the elevator. I said, if that's the case, perhaps it's because I lack the funds to buy the votes. I'd like to think we are in big change here in this Capitol. It's ready new. It's been remodeled. We've got new people here. We can correct this oversight. And I thank you for the time to share my frustrations with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Anna Lou Vincent. boy, this is going to be hard. It looks like Erlo Wood.
Mr. Wood?
No, it is U N or R O B R W O O D. As best I can read it. Nobody here by that name. Okay. Or even close.
It might be in the other room.
Anna Lou Vincent? Okay. All right. I'll go along then with the people who are still more than 100 miles away. I've got an additional panel. Don McGilvery, Gilly Burlingham. Are they here? They may be in the other room, I suppose. If they come in from the other room, we'll let them testify. Let's go ahead with Dr. Bigland, Bob Lawrence, and Kayleen Dethridge. Ah, yes, we do have one. And you are?
Don McGilvery.
Please, come forward.
We were overflowing.
Yes. Thank you. We'll be there in just a minute for you.
Okay. My name is Don McGilvery, Chair Barnhart, and members of the committee.
Sound is working in the other room.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Yes. It's just it's a long way little down. Bit of a distance.
It is a hike.
I will just leave my testimony here, but just like to make couple of comments. One is that, to me, this whole discussion leads to the need for comprehensive tax reform in the state of Oregon. I have been involved with this issue, as well as the testifying at various hearings, and you know, for the past 10 years on comprehensive tax reform and making suggestions about how that should be done. I'm not in favor of a sales tax, but I am in favor of other consumption taxes. And I'm also very much in favor of incentive taxation, which I would think this would be perhaps one which basically tends to improve our society through taxation. And I'll just leave it at that at this point.
Thank you very much. Sure. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, my name is Gilly Burlingham, and I came up with Marianne Schwab and Don McGilvery. I didn't bring a car out here to Oregon. I think I'm a good Oregonian. I'm in District 42. There's my wonderful rep. I'm thrilled, having lived in New York State, the quality of the people that I had a hard time choosing among just thrills me. I would like to say that I'm totally for this bill. I'm also totally believe in Oregon craft beer, and I'm sorry about the jobs that are going to be lost. I think this is true in almost any industry under our terrible economic conditions. And I also, everybody who comes to testify always speaks some aspect of the truth. You know that. And so I respect everything I heard. I know that mandate treatment doesn't work. I suggest perhaps it should be an elective in prison, because when people are ready for treatment, then they really respond. And yes, it's true. If they're not ready, it is wasted on them. But believe me, I know prisons never have enough help. I had a friend who used to volunteer the only counseling available in Attica, and the guys would run down the hall to get to her session because it meant so much to those who were ready to hear about why they were violent with their wives. In my written testimony, who do I give it to? You will see that I address it in a very personal way. And my chief point is that beer drinking is not a sin. It's a luxury. And unfortunately, in these tough times, we all have to give up some luxury. I suggest that those who have to should drink only a little beer. And I, maybe because I have a kid in kindergarten, I believe in show and tell. When I moved out here, I found out that Full Sail is an ESOP. And unfortunately, I've lost my sense of smell as an adult, so just so long as it isn't sweet, it doesn't matter what I drink, so I don't have to go to a tremendously high-end craft beer or anything. But I drink, well, this will be my bottle for the month. I stint myself from this wonderful, healthy, nutritious beverage because I do not believe in spending on luxuries. I like to save my money to donate to good causes. So, as I say, I respect all the craft breweries, and I wish them the best of luck. I hope maybe all the laid-off people will get green jobs like the governor is pushing on us. I just thank you very much. It's a thrill for me to be here. Someday I'd love to tell you what it's like in New York State where three guys run the whole legislature. Thank you.
We promise that that does not happen here. Questions for that panel?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Oh, any questions?
No questions. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Sorry we were late.
I appreciate it. Now, I called another panel, and so why don't we ask them to go ahead. Is there anyone else who's here today who hasn't been heard who will have great difficulty getting here on Wednesday? There's one over here. Three. You three are next, whoever you are.
There's
okay?
One more in the back.
I'm sorry?
There's a fourth behind
them. And there's one in the back.
Over behind the committee staff.
Over here. All right. Those four we'll hear from next. Please.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. My name is Kayleen Dethridge, and I'm the Vice President of Oregon Partnership, and I'm also a member of the Governor's Methamphetamine Task Force. I'd like to talk to you today about why now is the time for an increase in the cost recovery fee on beer. Earlier, you heard remarks from Representative Cannon about his staff doing some price comparison work to see what the cost of beer was in other states where there's a beer tax higher than ours. Yesterday, I decided to do that pretty literally, and so I went to the Fred Meyer in North Portland near my home, and then I went up to Vancouver to the Fred Meyer, and I bought a 12-pack of Budweiser and a 6-pack of Widmer Hefeweizen. And as you can see from the comparison I've given you, the cost of the Budweiser was the same, $9.99 in Washington, $9.99 in Oregon. And then I was shocked to find that in Vancouver, the Widmer was $8.69 a 6-pack, and in Oregon, it was $9.49 a 6-pack. So I just submit to you that I'm not convinced at all that the price of beer will go up, and that that corroborates the testimony that you heard from Representative Cannon, that in other states where we have a beer tax higher than we have in Oregon, we're not finding beer prices that are astronomically higher than we have here in our state. I think as a state, we're really going to have to consider the fact that we're not going to work our way out of our financial woes easily or soon. If you agree with me that we won't resolve all of the state's financial challenges this biennium, which means the legislature will face many of these issues again in 2 years, then let's consider what improvements we can make today that will strengthen our state's position in 2011. The decisions that we make about how to dig Oregon out of this economic crisis should consider all the factors that affect our state's financial health, a crucial consideration being the staggering economic and social costs of alcohol and drug abuse. Those numbers have a significant impact because the greater those costs, the less revenue that you all have to invest in critical areas like education, healthcare, and our infrastructure. The financial consequences of alcohol and drug abuse severely weaken our state. Consider the figures that you heard earlier from Bob Whalen with Echo Northwest. $813 million in health care costs, $960 million, $67 million in property and violent offense, crime, law enforcement, criminal justice, and social programs, and a staggering $4.15 billion in lost earnings due to lost productivity by users and their victims. That's $5.93 billion in 2006 that it cost our state to recover from the cost of alcohol and drug abuse. Now, that number, if we look just at alcohol, the number is $3.22 billion in 2006. That's about 8 times greater than the $395 million in tax revenue collected in fiscal 2006 from the sale of alcohol. Alcohol is the biggest substance abuse problem in Oregon. My organization, Oregon Partnership, operates statewide crisis lines, connecting people struggling with addiction to treatment and other helping resources. Alcohol is the number one reason that people call the crisis lines. You heard earlier about the problems we've had in our state with methamphetamine, and I serve on our governor's methamphetamine task force, and I can tell you that even when meth use was at its highest in Oregon, alcohol was still the number one drug of abuse in our state and the number one reason why people call our crisis lines. Oregon Partnership's call volume in the last few months is up 60% compared with the same period a year ago. And we have seen those numbers continue to grow as our souring economy has hit home for many Oregon families. Make no mistake that a cost recovery fee on beer today will help right a battered economy, asking the product that generates $3.2 billion a year in expense to Oregonians to pay for the problems that it causes. The beer tax in this state has not budged in 32 years, since 1977. Back then, I was a five-year-old, sitting in a kindergarten classroom in Hillsborough. The Trailblazers were NBA champs. The late Frank Roberts served in the Oregon legislature. In 1977, Oregon's median income was about $13,500. Now it's over $50,000. A gallon of gas was 62 cents, and today it's above $2. And that includes beer. In 1977, a six-pack cost about $1.40. Today it's risen to roughly $5. Yet the tax on beer has remained unchanged, stagnant in a generation. Why is that sacred? So who would a beer tax increase affect? There's scant evidence that it would change the overall amount of beer consumed, except among two groups: price-sensitive adolescents and teens, minors in our state, and heavy drinkers. Young people are the exact folks we don't want drinking, yet Oregon youth today drink alcohol at rates 94% above the national average. Heavy drinkers create the greatest social and economic cost of alcohol abuse, a price now shouldered by every taxpayer in our state. But an increase in the cost recovery fee on beer would decrease that price. In contrast, consumption by folks who enjoy a quality beer from time to time won't be affected much at all. One final point. A majority of Oregonians in poll after poll say that they would support an increase in the tax. A statewide poll conducted just a few months ago found more than 60% in favor of increasing the tax. I urge you to respond to the will of the majority of Oregonians and to consider increasing the beer tax in the context of Oregon's economy. Now is the time. Thanks for the opportunity to present this morning.
Thank you very much. Dr. Biglin.
My name is Anthony Biglin. For the record, I'm a senior scientist at Oregon Research Institute, the past president of the Society for Prevention Research, and a member of the Institute of Medicine Committee that just issued a report last week on the efficacy of prevention. The materials that I've provided you summarize the empirical evidence regarding the effects of the price of alcohol, and specifically beer, on alcohol-related public health problems. The evidence is listed on the back of the material I gave you. The evidence is quite solid. Increasing the price of beer reduces adolescent drinking. Higher beer prices reduce consumption by adolescents. Higher beer prices have a greater impact on heavy drinking youth than on other youth. And I would note that the Oregon Healthy Teens data show that across the counties, between 8.4% and 19% of eighth graders report binge drinking in the last month. That's five or more drinks at one time. Binge drinking is a predictor of alcohol-related car crashes and is also a predictor of becoming an alcoholic. Increasing the price of beer reduces alcohol-related car crashes and deaths. In recent years, between 177 and 207 people in Oregon have died in alcohol-related car crashes. Increased taxes on alcoholic beverages reduce drinking and driving in all segments of the population, but have their strongest impact on youth. A 10% increase in the price of alcohol would result in a 12.6% drop in drinking and driving among young men and a 21% drop among young women. Increasing the price of beer will also prevent disease and injury. Higher beer taxes lead to significant reductions in workplace injuries. They reduce the rates of suicide, alcohol-related diseases, and deaths from drowning and accidental falls and fires. Increased taxes on alcoholic beverages result in significant reductions in sexually transmitted diseases. Increasing the price of beer will also reduce violence. A 10% increase in beer prices reduces the number of students involved in violent behavior by about 4%. Higher beer taxes reduce the rates of homicide, rape, and robbery. An increase in beer tax leads to reduction in child abuse. Higher alcohol beverage prices reduce the rate of severe domestic violence. And finally, increasing the price of beer will increase students' academic achievement. Increases in alcohol prices will lead to improved educational outcomes both for high school students and for college students. I would just have you consider that all of these dry statistics amount to specific people who will or will not die in Oregon as a result of alcohol-related car crashes, the development of addictions, the violence, and so on, that can be prevented. And the last thing I would say is that there is clear empirical evidence of the efficacy of both treatment and prevention in preventing these problems. If we put the money that would be raised by this into preventing and treating the problems that we have, we could significantly reduce not only alcohol-related problems, but all of the youth problems, because all of those problems are interrelated. So I urge you to pass this bill.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. I think we're on the eve side of good morning, but anyway, good morning, and to the members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Lawrence, and I'm a member of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services, and I'm a resident of Lake Oswego. The commission is in support of House Bill 2461, and we hope that through the legislative process that we are able to generate some kind of a bill that does as little harm as possible to the industry, as well as providing the most benefit to the people that need the help. GCSS has been involved with promotion and education on older adult mental health needs for many years. We have been consistently getting involved with the Community Mental Health Coalition. We are now participating in the Mental Health Caucus meetings. We have partnered with the Oregon State Health Division on terms of education and promotion and advocacy for adult suicide prevention, since Oregon has the fourth highest suicide rate amongst seniors in the nation. During the 17 city visits the Governor's Commission on Senior Services has made in the last 5 years, we have had the opportunity to talk directly with mental health providers, protective service workers, law enforcement, and community members. The lack of mental health services were paramount in everyone's mind. There was universal frustration with the level of mental health services they could provide. There was a demanding need for gambling, alcohol, and addiction services demonstrated in every community we visited, particularly with the increasing number of older adults requiring services demonstrated by the dramatic aging demographic. The Governor's Commission on Senior Services hopes that we can legislatively produce a bill, and we are in support of Senate Bill 2461.
Thank you very much. I note that we're past the time that I said we were going to adjourn. I'm willing to stay to listen to the four people who held up their hands, indicating they were not going to be able to come back on Wednesday. Other committee members are excused if they need to go now. Others who are willing to stay, please do that. And if you can be as brief as possible, adding new information, that would be most beneficial for us.
Okay. Great. Chair Barnhart, committee members, thanks for extending the time to allow me to testify today. My name is Gary Cobb, and I kind of want to give you a little bit of history about myself. Prior to November 16th, 2000, I was one of the alcoholics that was a very good alcoholic. I practiced in spending any amount of money on a glass of beer, and as a result of all that, my life kind of did not turn out as I probably hoped that it would. So I want to get to the point of what I really want to bring the information to you. After November 16th, 2000, after accessing chemical dependency treatment, that my life is complete 180 degrees. And what I mean by that is that what I used to just kind of like be a cost burden on my community, I actually pay into the system, you know, spend hundreds of dollars weekly as a result of being employed, and pay, you know, of course, back into the state taxes. So there's a dynamic here that we get when we allow chemical dependency services to people. It creates revenue for our communities. And I think that, for the most part, everybody in this room wants the best for our communities. And, you know, I'm not in a, I don't own a beer company or anything like that, but I know that if I did, that if I could do a little bit a part to help out my community in the way of providing services to people, that at least I could go to bed at night and kind of think that, okay, not only is my company kind of paying into being a part of the economy, but I'm also in a position to help people out. So I want us to kind of really work together on all this. But the facts remain that treatment services help support the economy. People get clean, and I'm just one of hundreds of people that I know of that have gotten clean. I'm part of a recovery community advisory group. We meet the second Thursday down here in Salem, so if anybody wants to be a part of our advisory group to help get some solutions to our state, then please contact me.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
My name is Mark Kirkmeyer. I'm here representing a group of three family-owned and operated mom-and-pop beer license establishments in Portland, including my own, the Krakow Cafe. Our group understands the arguments that the brewery and beer distribution lobby makes against this proposed tax. We don't find those arguments convincing. Our group instead supports creation of a modest beer tax of between 5 and 7 cents, phased in over a 2-year period. We're small companies, but we can absorb this tax increase. Our customers can absorb this tax increase. But what we cannot absorb is our own beer industry's refusal to even slightly help fund adequate A&D treatment for alcohol abuse problems that our own industry provides the very product for that abuse to happen. We understand that the addiction epidemic might not hurt the large shareholders of national beer companies, but it hurts the neighborhoods we operate and where we live. And it directly hurts us with higher insurance rates and hurts us and every taxpayer with ever more prisons to build. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. My name is Ronnie Daniels, and I live in Sheridan, Oregon. And I don't need no talking points to get my point across. My issue today is that I've just been laid off. I used to be flagger, watch out on the highway, especially for electricians and various other private businesses that required security. Now, I enjoy my beer or other things responsibly and sincerely. I would like to note three things. Maybe the other states do have a higher tax than we do, but when you go through and check their budgets, their educational budget is not over 50%. Their social budget is usually right behind law enforcement. That's funded maintainably. They adjust according to the times. I hear some complaints from various hearsay, but, you know, horse's mouth, it's whoever's made that statement, that we can absorb this tax. I cannot absorb these taxes this state is trying to propose. These taxes, right now, in a depressed economy, as we're spiraling near 10% in unemployment, and I'm one of those walking, and I have to live on a discretionary budget. It's time that the state legislators look back and maybe take a percentage point from education, which I think we fund dollar for dollar per capita higher than any other state in the union. And I feel and strongly feel against this 2461. And I know that some people say, well, he does this, that, and that, maybe don't know the comes. I know that we have a mental health problem. I know that we have an alcohol problem. You will always have that. The responsibilities of it is maybe making some of these teenagers, if the 94% that been claimed that we're higher than national average on teenagers, if that's a true statement, then maybe we need to take some of that money that we're spending in schools and crack down, also hold the parents accountable. Number three, the last thing I'm going to come across with is that I notice mental health budgets has gone down since the Kitts Hubbard administration. And I noticed also this governor have not put on his list. Number four, the jobs, this green job that they say it's supposed to help maintain. Well, if we were manufacturing and make sure jobs is here, manufacturing and selling, that's one thing. But I feel right now with the proposed taxes that they want to throw on me, I have a 83 truck, I have a camper that's on 71. With the proposed taxes that this legislature is trying to make up on the budget, it's going to economically kill me. And this little discretionary budget, which I spend less than $10 a week for, and responsible and accountable for my actions, I feel that it's not going to be worth it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Tim Hartnett. I'm here representing the Oregon Prevention, Education, and Recovery Association. We are 28 treatment and prevention and staff development organizations from around the state. that represent the overwhelming majority of publicly funded private sector alcohol and drug abuse treatment and prevention. I'm also the executive director of CODA, one of Portland's oldest alcohol and drug treatment agencies. I'm here on behalf of the membership in support of House Bill 2461, the Prevention, Recovery, and Treatment Tax on Malt Beverages. On behalf of the membership, I want to let you know that we are really grateful for you hearing this bill. It's been a struggle to get here over the years. I just really have one very straightforward message. Alcohol and drug abuse are a root cause or contributing factor in just about everything that Oregonians worry about. And given that your central task as a committee is to look at revenue and spending, I can't think of a more significant issue that drives or is the hydraulics for government spending. Virtually anything you look at in terms of government spending, alcohol and drug abuse impacts. If we look at traffic fatalities, poor work performance, work-related accidents, and by the way, one in three people in medical surgical floors today in hospitals are being treated for an alcohol or other drug-related illness. One in three. Let's say they screwed up the research. Let's make it one in four. Let's make it one in five. That's still 20%. The numbers are mind-boggling. If we look at divorce, 50% of the women who are interviewed in a divorce study describe substance abuse as a contributing factor to divorce. Domestic violence, as was mentioned earlier, half the domestic violence cases in Oregon are touched by alcohol and drug abuse. Crime, 90% of the people who are in prison today were either under the influence or have a diagnosable alcohol or drug condition at the time they committed their crime. Juvenile delinquency, learning disabilities, fetal alcohol effects, fetal alcohol syndrome, teen pregnancy, psychiatric illness, child abuse. Half of the caseload in the child welfare system today is touched by alcohol or drug use. Literally, the list is endless and is virtually mind-numbing when you go through it. And that's about half of the list. I'm truncating it for us today. We look today at 13% of 8th graders report binge drinking in the past month. A short while ago, you had over 10 members on this committee. That would have meant if you were a group of 8th graders, 1 in 10 of you would have binge drank in the past month. Staggering. 40% of 18 to 25-year-olds report binge drinking in the past month. Literally every aspect of public life is touched by alcohol and drug abuse. Yet every tax dollar spent on treatment in Oregon produces $560 in avoided costs to the taxpayers. It's a good business proposition. Alcohol and drug treatment, which this bill would support, is pro-family, it's pro-children, it builds healthy communities, and it certainly builds safer communities. Thanks so much for staying the extra time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there questions for this panel? Thank you very much, gentlemen. As I indicated before, we will continue this hearing on Wednesday. In addition to the other business that we have scheduled that day, for those who were unable to testify today, we appreciate your patience. As you can see, there was a lot of interest in this topic. And with that, the hearing is closed for today, and the committee is adjourned. Have fun with this.